What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. The Afghan-American accused of setting off a bomb in New York that wounded 29 people is facing federal charges. Ahmad Khan Rahami faces multiple counts of using weapons of mass destruction and an attack on public place. The charges include planting a bomb in New Jersey Saturday, forcing officials to cancel a charity road race. White House spokesman Josh Earnest.
Based on the indications that we've seen so far, it does appear that this is an act of terrorism, and that's why the investigation is being conducted the way that it is. You know, the situation yesterday when the president addressed it was still quite fluid.
Rahami is also facing charges of attempted murder stemming from a shootout with police just before he was shot and arrested Monday in Linden, New Jersey. The FBI is investigating whether he has any overseas terrorist ties. U.S. President Barack Obama delivered his final address at the United Nations Tuesday, speaking to beliefs on working together as a unified group.
Each of us, as leaders, each nation, can choose to reject those who appeal to our worst impulses and embrace those who appeal to our best. For we have shown that we can choose a better history.
The president also warned that there are deep fault lines in the international order, causing the massive refugee crisis, economic disruptions, and insecurity. On the crisis in Syria, he said there is no ultimate military victory to be won and said a diplomatic solution must be pursued. This is VOA News. The United States is holding Russia responsible for an attack on a humanitarian convoy in northern Syria that killed nearly two dozen people, mostly civilians.
In terms of how we test going forward, the principal way is whether there is a commitment to follow through on the grounding of the Syrian Air Force and the cessation of Russian airstrikes in areas where terrorist organizations are not operating, and certainly areas where we're seeking to provide humanitarian assistance.
Ben Rhodes, a deputy national security advisor for the White House, told reporters Tuesday evening the attack has raised questions about Moscow keeping its word on an agreed ceasefire in Syria. Witnesses say a popular American English teacher was taken into custody in Yemen's capital Sana'a Tuesday by gunmen wearing civilian clothes. Students say gunmen surrounded the school while others burst into the building and took Peter Willems to an undisclosed location. Reports say the gunmen are Houthi rebels who control the capital. Local leaders in Pakistan and Afghanistan say they are seeing a resurgence and regrouping of Islamic State fighters in the Afghanistan-Pakistan border region. Afghan forces, aided by U.S. bombers, reportedly intensified attacks on remote mountainous areas of the ISIS positions Tuesday. Afghan and U.S. coalition forces recently cleared many of the ISIS militants in a number of districts in eastern Nangarhar province. But tribal leaders told VOA ISIS has recaptured several remote villages bordering Pakistan. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump and Democratic rival Hillary Clinton attacked each other Tuesday as unfit to carry the U.S. fight to defeat the Islamic State jihadists. Trump, a businessman who is making his first leap into national politics, claims Clinton demonstrates a level of ignorance about the terror threat that is disqualifying for a person seeking the presidency. Clinton, a former senator and secretary of state looking to become the country's first female president, alleged Monday that Trump's anti-Muslim rhetoric has made him a recruiting sergeant for the terrorists. Clinton and Trump will square off in their first of three debates next Monday at a New York university. The debate will consist of two 15-minute segments for each of three topics: America's direction, achieving prosperity, and securing America. A Brazilian judge has ordered former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva to stand trial on charges of corruption and money laundering. He is accused of accepting just over $1 million in bribes connecting to a sweeping kickback probe of a state-run oil company. Also on trial will be the former First Lady and six others. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington. Join us for more news at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boateng in Washington. Today is Wednesday, September 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South African President Jacob Zuma appeals for more international support to end Africa's conflicts.
The African continent remains committed through the African Union and its peace and security architecture to resolve the remaining conflict areas.
That's South African President Jacob Zuma speaking Tuesday at the UN General Assembly. Mr. Zuma also calls for a reform of the UN Security Council. More people were killed on Tuesday in the second day of protests in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has again said his government is making great progress in the fight against Boko Haram.
Nigeria has made remarkable progress in our resolve to defeat Boko Haram, whose capacity to launch orchestrated attacks has been severely degraded.
That's President Buhari speaking Tuesday at the United Nations. In Gabon, it appears there is an agreement to disagree on recounting the votes in last month's presidential election. There's another defection from South Sudan government to Riek Machar. And a Nigerian youth roller skating to unite youths in the streets. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. At the United Nations General Assembly meeting in New York, South African President Jacob Zuma has appealed to the UN Security Council to support African peacekeeping operations so as to once and for all end the continent's conflicts. Speaking Tuesday, Mr. Zuma said the African Union remains committed to resolving the remaining conflicts by the year 2020.
Mr. President, the African continent remains committed through the African Union and its peace and security architecture to resolve the remaining conflict areas. We have committed ourselves to silence the guns by 2020. We appeal to the United Nations Security Council, in particular, to support African peace operations so that we can achieve this noble goal. The situation in Libya, South Sudan, and the Central African Republic remains a continental priority. We strongly urge the United Nations Security Council to better align and coordinate with the African Union in efforts to bring about peace in these sister countries and the continent at large.
Mr. Zuma also called for reform of the UN Security Council to address what he called the challenges of the 21st century.
The UN Security Council is supposed to act in our collective interests without being bogged down by domestic narrow interests of few states. It is imperative and urgent that the United Nations, and in particular the Security Council, should be reformed. South Africa has been calling for and will continue to call for the fundamental reform of the United Nations Security Council in order to ensure the representation of Africa. 1 billion people cannot continue to be denied a voice in this manner.
President Zuma thanked outgoing UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon for his service. He called for a more prominent role of the UN General Assembly in choosing the next Secretary General.
We believe in a balanced and equal role between the two principal organs on the question of the selection of the Secretary General. The General Assembly, as the most representative organ representing all the aspirations of the peoples of the world, should be central in determining the right man or woman to lead the UN to the future. The UNGA cannot be expected to just rubber stamp decisions of the Security Council. South Africa is particularly supportive of the proposal to limit the term of office of the Secretary General to a 7-year non-renewable term in order to allow him or her to work without being concerned about reappointment.
The South African President Jacob Zuma speaking Tuesday at the ongoing UN General Assembly meeting in New York. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says his government will continue to respect human rights in its fight against Boko Haram. Speaking Tuesday at the United Nations General Assembly in New York, Mr. Buhari said his government is making significant progress in the fight against the terror group.
Nigeria has made remarkable progress in our resolve to defeat Boko Haram, whose capacity to launch orchestrated attacks has been severely degraded. In the last few months, their operations have been limited to sporadic use of improvised explosive devices against soft targets. Nigeria has continued to combat terrorism based on the established rules of engagement and in conformity with international best practices. I take this opportunity to reaffirm Nigeria's commitment to human rights norms and international humanitarian law in our efforts to counter terrorism and violent extremism. I also wish to restate the assurance that the federal government of Nigeria is employing all our judicial tools to investigate and treat reported cases of human rights violations. I commend the contribution of our neighbors, Benin Republic, Republic of Cameroon, Republic of Chad, and the Republic of Niger, whose combined efforts under the multinational joint task force accomplished the present return of normalcy in areas hitherto occupied by Boko Haram.
President Buhari also said fighting corruption remains a cardinal pillar of his administration and that the fight against corruption has yielded some positive results, including the recovery of stolen state funds.
Corruption freezes development, thereby undermining the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals. I am pleased that our efforts in fighting corruption are yielding positive results, including significant stolen asset recoveries. The anti-corruption summit held in London in May this year served as further reassurance of the global community's commitment to fight corruption through the proposed practical steps to address the challenges, including actions to hold perpetrators to justice within the law. Nigeria supports the development of an international legal framework to enforce anti-corruption measures and strengthen existing international institutions to effectively deal with corrupt practices. Nigeria calls on member states that are yet to sign up the United Nations Convention Against Corruption to do so. Nigeria will continue to advocate for the facilitation of the recovery of illicit financial assets. Indeed, the speedy and unconditional return of stolen public assets should be the focus of the follow-up anti-corruption conference to be hosted by the United States and United Kingdom in Washington next year.
Mr. Buhari also said his administration is committed to dealing with the problems caused by climate change, including the impact on the Lake Chad Basin and the Niger Delta region of Nigeria. He called on international partners to support the Ogoni Land Restoration Fund.
The negative consequences of climate change have manifested in the drying up of our Lake Chad. The means of livelihood of an estimated 30 million inhabitants of the Lake Chad Basin spread across Cameroon, Chad, Niger, Nigeria, are being severely threatened. The cost of replenishing the lake has been put at $14 billion United States dollars under a five-year plan which should be accorded global attention. In furtherance of our commitment to environmental sustainability, Nigeria has launched the cleanup of Ogoni land in Nigeria's Niger Delta based on 2011 environmental assessment of the area by the United Nations Environment Program. Multinational oil companies operating in the area will be required to live up to their corporate social responsibilities and contribute to the cleaning up of the environment degraded as a result of their activities and operations. We call on development partners and multinationals to support our effort through the Ogoni Land Restoration Fund.
That's Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari speaking Tuesday at the United Nations. Today's Wednesday, September 21st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. More people were killed yesterday in the Democratic Republic of Congo in a second day of violent opposition protests against President Joseph Kabila's government. One human rights group says more than 40 people have been killed, most of them civilians. William Claus has the latest from Kinshasa.
There were sporadic clashes between police and groups of young men early Tuesday in some parts of the capital. Unusually for Kinshasa, trucks full of soldiers from the Republican Guard were out on the streets. Heavier violence took place overnight as armed men set fire to at least five headquarters of opposition parties that had helped organise the protests Monday. Several pro-government parties saw their offices burned down during those protests. Félix Tshisekedi, a leading figure in the largest opposition party, the UDPS, spoke to reporters Tuesday as people picked through the remains of his headquarters in Limité, an opposition stronghold. Tshisekedi says commandos from the ruling party arrived at 2 a.m. and went to work until 4:30 a.m. They attacked and killed our guards, he said. There are five dead. Tshisekedi went on to say that the DRC is a dictatorship, and he says this government deserves the popular revolt that is coming to topple it. He later told VOA by phone that the death toll from the overnight attack has risen to seven, and others are still missing. Emery Akunji, a parliamentarian from another party targeted during the night, told VOA that heavily armed men smashed down the door just before 5 a.m. and threw bombs, setting fire to the building. Government spokesman Lambert Mende told VOA by phone that the government has called on the public prosecutor to expand his investigation into Monday's unrest to include the violence overnight. We do not know who is responsible for these attacks, Mende said. But as a government, we condemn anyone who takes it upon themselves to seek vengeance. He said that the government will wait for the prosecutor to finish the inquiry into who is responsible for the violence. The opposition coalition, known as the Rassemblement, or the Assembly, had organized a march Monday to demand that President Kabila step down in December, when his second term ends. The Electoral Commission, however, has delayed the elections, saying it may need until 2018 to create a new voter roll. The opposition asserts that Kabila simply wants to stay in power. Opposition leaders say security forces obstructed their planned march on Monday, firing tear gas to disperse protesters as they gathered. The government says it had withdrawn authorization for the demonstration after violence from the protesters. The Interior Minister said 17 people were killed, three policemen and 14 civilians. But Human Rights Watch says it has received credible reports that security forces have killed at least 37 people since the protests began. The group's DRC researcher, Ida Sawyer, told VOA that most were killed when the security forces fired on crowds of protesters. She says others died when security forces burned down opposition party headquarters. Sawyer also says that Human Rights Watch has received credible reports that protesters have killed at least six police officers and a supporter of President Kabila's party, and have also burned and looted several shops and police stations. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
In Gabon, there are conflicting reports whether there's been an agreement between President Ali Bongo and opposition leader Jean Ping to recount the votes from last month's presidential election. In one account, the French news agency said the two sides agree to recount the votes but disagree on which votes to count. Mr. Ping has asked the Constitutional Court for a recount of the votes from President Bongo's home region of Hautogoué. But the same report, quoting the lawyer for Mr. Bongo, said the two sides agree to recount all the votes from all 2,579 polling stations in the country. Paul-Marie Ganjou represents Mr. Ping's party on the Gabon Elections Commission.
I heard that lawyers from both parties agreed for the recounting at first, but they didn't reach an agreement like a written agreement or even a verbal agreement. The jumping lawyers from the beginning asked for the recounting, and Mr. Bongo lawyers didn't refuse the recounting, saying that if there is a recounting, it should be for the whole country, I mean the whole polls.
So, Paul, listening to you, let me get it right. So the lawyers for Mr. Jean Ping and the lawyers for Mr. Ali Bongo, they did agree that there must be recount, but they disagree on what should be recounted. Is that correct?
I can say that they did agree together on what should be the recounting. Like I said, Mr. Jean Ping lawyer, from the beginning, asked for a recounting of the Hautogoué province, because the request of Mr. Ping is only based on the Hautogoué province. Mr. Ali Bongo lawyers used to say that, if there should be a recounting, I mean, why not? But because they have their own ballot papers. So we cannot say today that they agreed on something specific or they agreed on what should be the recounting, because they didn't sit on the table to discuss the matter. Like I said again, the thing is the Constitutional Court said that they refuse to have any people around the table during the judicial process they will do inside the court at all.
It seems to me, because Mr. Jean Ping went to the Constitutional Court asking for recount of the votes from Hautogoué. Now, it seems to me both sides are teetering on an agreement to recount. If there is going to be any recount, who is going to do the recount, the Electoral Commission or the Constitutional Court?
The key question, who should be the recounting at the recount? In our understanding, either way, the Constitutional Court or the Electoral Commission can do that. The thing for us is just to, the recounting be done with both parties present attending the process to give some transparency in what will be done. That's the thing. Now, if the Constitutional Court says that they will do that by themselves, what could be the legitimacy of this recounting? The guarantee is that the recounting would be done based on what we think is transparent. Is that the key question?
Do we know when the ruling from the Constitutional Court will come down? Do we know? Is it sometime this week or when?
It should be on Friday at the latest, based on the law, because there are 15 days between the first day of Mr. Ping introduced his request and the end of the process is 15 days.
Paul-Marie Ganjou represents opposition leader Jean Ping's party on the Gabon Elections Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Libreville. The former deputy governor of South Sudan, Ye River State, says he has joined the faction of the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition that is loyal to former first vice president Riek Machar. Brigadier Ibrahim Wani says he defected to the SPLA-IO in order to mobilize fighters for Riek Machar in the former Central Equatorial State. Wani says the situation in Ye River State is dire. He calls the entire population of the state traumatized by the atrocities allegedly committed by the South Sudan Army.
It became very painful when your own comrade, your own brother, turned to oppress you when you have been fighting together the same enemy. Now, as I'm talking to you, all the Equatorians have become subject for any mistreatment, tortured, killed, arrested, sodomized, and any other dirty game are being done on Equatorians.
Brigadier Abraham Wani, you are making very strong allegations here. Who is committing these atrocities that you have been listing to me?
It's not an allegation, it is a reality. Last year, when the Security Act that was discussed in the parliament and many other members of the parliament were dismissed because they refused to endorse the Security Act, it was enforced by force and the security element had been empowered. As I'm talking now, the power of the security is the only power that is being used for arresting the people, killing the people, doing anything, and no security officer can be asked whatever he does. Now, many Equatorians, over thousands of Equatorians, are under arrest. Others are killed, either slaughtered like goats, thrown into water, shot by gun, or beaten by sticks until he is dead. 2 weeks ago, in my own village, over 11 people were slaughtered, including children.
You were the deputy governor of Yei State, quite a high person in the hierarchy of the government in Yei State. What were you doing to prevent this from happening?
I cannot prevent it because the security has been empowered to do whatever they want to do. And if I was to remain there, I would have been, because I'm even a subject, I can get killed.
And so you are telling me that when security officers in your state, Yei, come over there, they don't even respect a deputy governor?
They don't respect a deputy governor. They don't respect even governor. And by the way, how many governors who are under arrest? Bakasor was under arrest, and he was a governor by then. More than twice, he was mistreated, tortured, and humiliated. He was under arrest. And the deputy governor of Wau was arrested. And the governor of Wau, Elias Waya, was arrested. It is not the question of being a governor, but the question that the security people are empowered and they have the law in their hand. They can arrest anybody, they can molest anybody, they can kill anybody, they can abuse anybody, and nobody can question them. Not only that, by the way, not only that. Currently, as a situation is there, hundreds of thousands of people are already leaving South Sudan and they're going to Uganda. And the country is becoming completely without people. Even if I remain there as a deputy governor, who am I going to govern the people, them?
And what is your next move now that you are out of South Sudan in East Africa? What are you planning to do?
So I'm almost in Equatoria now. I'm in Equatoria. I will get down and we're going to fight and change that regime, the dictatorial regime, and bring a good government that would respect the people, will improve the economy, and develop our people, because the reasons why we liberate ourselves was actually to develop the people. There is no development these days. Infrastructures are not there. No electricity. In the market, when you go to the market, you find that prices have gone very high. It is even 3 times than the salary of the civil officers. Now, people are not even feeding. They are going hungry. And on that top, food is not, they are not producing anything because there is fighting everywhere. People are not producing food. Those who produce their food are left out. And what are you going to do there?
That's Brigadier Abraham Wani, former Deputy Governor of South Sudan's Yei River State. He was speaking with John Tanza from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. In Gabon, there are conflicting reports whether there's been an agreement between President Ali Bongo and opposition leader Jean Ping to recount the votes from last month's presidential election. In one account, the French news agency said the two sides agreed to recount the votes, but disagree on which votes to recount. And that's it for this Wednesday, September 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, the 71st United Nations General Assembly is underway in New York, including a first-of-its-kind summit of heads of state and government to address large movements of refugees and migrants with the aim of bringing countries together behind a more humane and coordinated approach. We'll discuss that and other issues next, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kHz and 15580 kHz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.